Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and take the number 7 train to Bliss Street, and you will find competing visions of bliss. The historic neighborhood of Sunnyside Gardens is the subject of an increasingly fierce debate among people who live there over the future of the neighborhood. The issue is whether the city should declare Sunnyside Gardens a landmark. Now, everyone agrees that the neighborhood is historic. It was built in the 1920s as a working-class housing experiment based on the British Garden City model. It's red brick homes, 1, 2, and 3-family homes, plus a few apartment buildings, if you've never seen it, built around courtyards of greenery to help create community. It was designed by the legendary urban planner and New Yorker magazine architecture critic, Lewis Mumford. The dispute today is over which residents would benefit and which ones would be hurt by declaring the neighborhood a landmark. Diversity issues have also become part of the debate, as have competing visions of what preserving the neighborhood's legacy means. It's a different kind of New York City land use struggle than what we usually hear about, not over a big developer's plans for change, but over how to keep a historic neighborhood the same. By way of full disclosure, my brother, Warren Lehrer, and his wife, Judith Sloan, are active on the anti-landmarking side of this debate and have been talking to me about their point of view. Joining me now are two guests, one for the landmarking of Sunnyside Gardens, one opposed. In favor of landmarking in Sunnyside is Jeffrey Kressler. He's a resident of Sunnyside Gardens and a historian at the College of Staten Island. Against the landmarking is Susan Micklejohn. She is also a Sunnyside Gardens resident and a professor of urban planning at Hunter College. And thanks to both of you for coming on. Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice to speak to you again.
I wonder if you could both first just talk about Sunnyside Gardens. It is a unique and historically significant place. You're both learned people with your professional expertise, both relevant to the debate about your homes. Jeffrey, you're a New York historian. Susan, you're an urban planning professor. And most of our listeners have probably never been to Sunnyside Gardens. So, Jeffrey, do you want to start? Describe this neighborhood and what you think is important to preserve here.
Thank you for inviting me on the show. I'd just like to correct one thing. I'm not at the College of Staten Island
any longer.
I'm at the I'm in the library at John Jay College of Criminal Justice.
Thank you.
Which is a quicker commute from Sunnyside. As for Sunnyside Gardens, there is no debate on the historical significance of this community. As you said, it's the first example of the English Garden City movement, and it inspired it has inspired architects and planners for generations. I know that I studied this when I was doing a history of Queens and a history of New York urban planning. I know my wife studied this when she was studying architecture up at Columbia University. So it's well known among in the fields as significant. In terms of the landmarks law, the landmarks law says that any place has to have a recognizable sense of place. That is actually the phrase that's in the law, and no one doubts that Sunnyside Gardens has a sense of place. Secondly, that it must possess architectural, historical, or cultural significance. And again, there's no debate that the neighborhood possesses each of those attributes.
Susan, your turn. Describe Sunnyside Gardens and what's important to preserve today about this historic neighborhood to you.
Well, I'd just like to preface my comments with the fact that it is already a neighborhood that has a special designation. It's a special plan community preservation district, which is administered under New York City zoning law, which was done in acknowledgement of the fact that it was a special community. I don't disagree with anything that was said previously, but I do want to stress that in both the case of the English Garden City movement and in the case of Sunnyside Gardens, that the key goals were not architectural, they were social. And the impetus to create English Garden Cities, as well as Sunnyside Gardens, was to create an inter-class community. English Garden Cities were created in reaction to the Industrial Revolution. They were attempting, in a kind of communitarian socialist way, to create a new kind of community where people from different class backgrounds would interact and become vital members of society. It's very difficult in this situation when you have a neighborhood that was created based on its social goals, and those are paramount in the eyes of historians in terms of Sunnyside Gardens, not its architecture. It's not to say the architecture is not charming. It is charming. That's one reason I chose it. But I did choose to live in Sunnyside Gardens because I was so cognizant and respectful of the attempt on the part of Lewis Mumford and Clarence Stein and Henry Wright, who were the designers, to really create a community, to create a physical environment that would create a more democratic community.
So, Susan, let me follow up and ask, are you arguing that there is something in the landmarking process that would preserve the way the buildings look, that would work against democracy or the spirit of Sunnyside Gardens?
That's exactly what I'm arguing.
Why?
That
Make
I think
that
it's
case.
Highly ironic, because when the Landmarks Commission, I don't feel a commission is an appropriate body to legislate Sunnyside Gardens. Its activities are opaque. It's an appointed body. Commissions, I was just teaching this in class the other day, that commissions were set up really to skirt the democratic process. They were set up in the progressive era. They were set up particularly in New York City in response to what was perceived to be the corruption of Tammany Hall. And what's interesting about this whole debate, which is not on the table, which I want to put overtly on the table here, is that Sunnyside Gardens is an immigrant community. 60% of the residents, well, 50% of the residents are foreign-born. Only 47% of the residents at this time are non-Hispanic white. There's tremendous unease in the community that I feel gave rise to this effort to make this community more expensive and more exclusive, and that speaks to the question you asked me, that once we start regulating the skins of the buildings, the bricks and mortars, the doors, the windows, and roofs, it's going to be a lot more expensive to maintain these houses.
Okay, so let me let Jeffrey Kressler respond to that.
Okay.
You hear her argument. It's that by landmarking, it will make it more expensive to maintain the buildings, maybe push property values and property values up, and make it more difficult for it to be a diverse community.
How much time do I have, Brian?
We have till the top of the hour.
I'm just what Susan said is probably very interesting, but it actually has nothing to do with the Landmarks Law and the way the Landmarks Law is been in effect, and as an urban historian, I just have to say that her description of so-called commissions has absolutely nothing to do with the Landmarks Preservation Commission, because that was not set up in the preservation era. It was only set up in 1965, and it was set up for a single reason, that the preservation of the city's historic resources is, as the law actually says, a necessity. It says it's a necessity. Further, the law has been ratified by the United States Supreme Court twice, once in the Penn Central case and the other in the St. Bartholomew's case. So the law, as a legitimate regulatory function of government, is not up for debate.
All right.
I will leave Susan to talk about the diversity of the community and the like. I will not allow her to suggest that those of us who are in favor of preservation are somehow working to exclude individuals from our neighborhood. The only thing that excludes people from any place in our neighborhood is the price. And the price of our homes and the apartments and all has been rising quite independent of Landmarks Preservation. And it has been rising even before this came on the table. And it would be rising just like a studio apartment in Manhattan has increased. The idea that the maintenance costs will somehow adversely affect tenants because it's a historic district, misses the point that these buildings are being renovated now, and it's not a historic district, and the rents are going to go up because that's what the law allows. I am frankly exhausted by having to defend preservation against charges that we are somehow doing this in order to keep people out of our neighborhood. No, it is not a negative we are trying to impose.
Well,
we are trying to protect what we see is the valuable experience of Sunnyside Gardens.
If I understood her argument, she was not accusing you of trying to exclude, but of a policy that would have the effect, because of cost, of excluding. And she referred to another level of preservation designation that already applies to Sunnyside Gardens that she said would already prevent it from changing its character to, you know, to grotesque McMansions or things like that. Do you disagree?
It's absolutely not true what she said. What is true is that we have a special planned community preservation district, which was created in 1974 with three other neighborhoods in New York City, the Harlem River Houses, Park Chester in the Bronx, built by MetLife, and Fresh Meadows, which was built by New York Life, which was Lewis Mumford's poster child for post-war neighborhood development. It was created to protect the open space, but this designation has been proven not to protect any of the aesthetic qualities of the buildings. We have asked city planning whether their protections would prevent people from, for example, ripping off their facade and replacing it with glass, putting aluminum siding or vinyl siding on their facade, raising their floor area another half story because that's what the zoning envelope permits. And all of that is legal under the protection of the special zoning. The special zoning only protects the open space.
So let me get a response. I understand. Right. Let me get a response. And Susan, you hear two things there. One, he's saying the special zoning that you have now would not sufficiently protect the look and feel of the neighborhood and open space. He also said that costs are going up anyway, and avoiding landmarking is not going to make a significant economic difference to people who live there or want to live there.
I would respond in several ways. First of all, Jeff is a newcomer to the neighborhood and hasn't been here when the initial conversations about making it a landmark district arose. And I was privy to those conversations. And frankly, given my own area of expertise, which I basically, all my research is about race and segregation at this point. It's about immigration. And I'm doing a study in the neighborhood about growing up in a multi-ethnic neighborhood. At that point, I was privy to conversations of the people who were starting this landmarking effort that were overtly anti-immigrant statements. And I just want to put that on the record. I'm not saying that even the majority of the people involved in the current effort feel that way, but I do feel that this is a discourse and a conversation that's not on the table that I feel should be on the table.
So you do think that there are people on the pro-landmarking side who want landmarking so the property values will go up to exclude people of color?
It was said not necessarily to exclude people of color. I think there was a basic unease in the neighborhood that the neighborhood as of 2000 is now 47% white, non-Hispanic white. I think that part of the expression of the, you have to understand too, and I want to put this on the record, there was an effort before the current landmarking effort on the part of the community board to come up with a democratic process to help create a much better enforcement system for the existing protections, which again is a special plan community preservation district, which not only regulates open space, but also regulates the envelope of the building, how big it can be, whether additions can be placed on it. There's existing legislation where there was an attempt to make it better. Unfortunately, the community board pretty much dropped the ball. This group came forward in a very secretive way, and that's part of what I object to. Understand that the historic impetus of this neighborhood was to create a more involved, integrated, democratic neighborhood.
All right.
This is its historic significance.
Jeffrey, respond to that for about 30 seconds, and we have to take a break, and we're going to take some phone calls from people from the neighborhood who are calling in.
Can I defend myself
of course.
Against this newcomer business? I mean, I've been involved with the history of Queens for over 25 years. I wrote my dissertation on the history of Queens, and Sunnyside Gardens was a big part of it. I have written a book called Historic Preservation in Queens, which outlines why such neighborhoods as this deserve protection. All of this about there's a third way to do it, the community board can do it. My wife is an architect, and you know what she's discovered? It's not possible to do work legally in this neighborhood because the current regulations prevent anything from happening. And the purpose of moving it to the Landmarks Commission is to make the system easier for homeowners to make the changes to their houses.
But I'm not sure you addressed the heart of her charges there.
What, that somehow preservationists are anti-diversity advocates? I'm not going to address that issue.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure she was saying you. I think she was saying one of the reasons it's become popular among
some homeowners.
No, that
is absolutely not true. That is an accusation that, if not me personally, has a bigoted attitude toward immigrants, then the people I'm in bed with do. And that is simply not the case.
All right.
People are upset about the illegal work that their neighbors do to their homes, the changes they make to the historic character of Sunnyside Gardens, by which we mean the external facades and the sense of place. We don't care who moves into the neighborhood, as long as they respect that ideal. Susan, I'll be glad to debate the historic origins of it. It was not intended to be people of all classes, and you know it was intended to be modest homes for the middle and lower middle class. That's who it was intended for.
Well, the two of you disagree on that. I could tell by Susan shaking her head, but we're going to move on to some callers. I was wrong that we need to take a break. We do not. We are talking about the controversy in Sunnyside Gardens, Queens, over landmarking the neighborhood, a landmark originally designed by the urban planner and New Yorker magazine architecture critic Lewis Mumford as a working-class housing experiment in the 1920s with red brick buildings built around courtyards of greenery. And in favor of landmarking, a Sunnyside Gardens resident, Jeffrey Kressler, who works in the library at John Jay College. Against the landmarking is Susan Micklejohn, also a Sunnyside Gardens resident and a professor of urban planning at Hunter College. Our phone number, 212-433-WNYC. Let me apologize in advance to the many of you from the neighborhood who are calling in who are not going to be able to get to. That is most of you. But let's take a few phone calls, one on each side at least. And Badran in Sunnyside, you're on WNYC. Hello, Badran.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I want to ask a question on the diversity. That's what Jeff was trying to do. I want to ask him. You guys had these meetings for almost 3 years. I've been living in the neighborhood for 10 years. I'm a Bengali community. We have hundreds of people living in that side. We were never invited to these meetings. We were always excluded. Why were we excluded?
I can only speak to what I know from the 2.5 years where I've lived there, but I do know because we have personally slipped invitations to every meeting under every door, and there has been never any intent to exclude anyone. The Landmarks Commission has been out at least 4 times. They've had at least 3, if not 4, public meetings. There have been other public meetings. No one is kept out. And as far as I know, flyers were slipped under every door in Sunnyside.
Badran, can I ask as a follow-up, because I know we had a reporter, Arun Venugopal from our newsroom, who went out to Sunnyside Gardens on Sunday when there was a public event, and he was told by members of the Bengali community there that they felt the Bengali community was being targeted. Is that your sense? Do you have any reason to believe that? Badran? Badran hung up? Okay, Badran is gone.
I'd just like to make a small comment about the openness, the supposed openness of these meetings. I joined the preservation group that Jeff is now a member of. I did it over the internet. I wrote the leader of this group, Herb Reynolds, that I'd like to be part of the group and I'd like to be part of the meetings, and I was never informed of the meetings. This has been a closed process. There have not been flyers under everyone's door.
I did not get a flyer from your last meeting, Jeff.
Let me continue speaking. I think that that is part of the reaction of many of the people in the neighborhood, myself included, given that the most historically significant aspect of the neighborhood was its attempt to be a more democratic community.
Let me get another caller. Jeremy in Sunnyside, who supports landmarking. Jeremy, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hi. I just want to mention that I've seen Susan speak at a couple of these meetings. So when she says she's not been invited, she came anyways, and we certainly have invited everyone. And I want to say that my favorite restaurant that was in the community was a Bengali restaurant. And, man, I'm sad that Spicy Mean has moved. But anyways, I wanted to speak about some of this race and class baiting that's coming on here. I'm not really... I don't approve of anyone in the community accusing anyone of the kind of racism and classism. It's really kind of it makes me feel a little dirty. The fact is, I understand Dr. Meiklejohn's anthropological, historical comments or existential worries. They're very interesting, but they're not terribly relevant to the current situation. Now, normally, I think class warfare is harmful, but in this case, it's just irrelevant. We're already well beyond what constitutes affordable housing. Price is proportional to the price of Manhattan real estate, not on any LPC regulations. It's already expensive. The question is, will it be expanded and expensive, or expensive and growing in a reasonable fashion?
Okay, Susan Meiklejohn, what about the horse being out of the barn in terms of price, one way or the other?
That's absolutely true, and that's why I think it's kind of ironic that there's this big effort right now, as if there's this really strong impetus to create, as you said, McMansions, or as Jeff said, to make glass facades or stucco facades. Frankly, the neighborhood is looking better and better. It's very unaffordable at this point. I own a three-family house. I don't think I could rent one of my apartments at this point.
So then is the racial exclusion
but
question just academic?
I don't think it's moot, and I don't think it's academic, because I was privy to these conversations, and I just have to repeat that this was what was said to me 3 years ago. Those immigrants, how they're decorating their houses, the kinds of fences they're putting up, the fact that they're putting AstroTurf in their front yard. This is what was said to me, and I do feel it's a real impetus. Otherwise, why was there no effort to create a democratic process at the neighborhood level to address some of what is perceived to be problems in how people are decorating or maintaining their homes? To me, what I was privy to, what I observed, was an exclusive group of people who kept their activities relatively below the radar screen and in the neighborhood, and also the Landmarks Commission, as part of the plan that my students and I did for all of Sunnyside, addressing its issues as a multi-ethnic community. I interviewed people at the Landmark Society who told me that this wasn't even going to be an issue to be discussed. This was a year ago. I was told that it wasn't even going to be an issue to discuss for another 2 to 3 years.
I have to jump in because we're just about out of time, but let me ask both of you, for people interested in this issue, what happens next and where can they get more information? Jeffrey?
As you know, the Landmarks Commission on Tuesday voted to calendar Sunnyside Gardens for a public hearing. And what happens next is they will schedule a public hearing where anyone can speak to express their views on this issue. I would add one thing about the transformation of the neighborhood, and that is, it is not the old-timers who are going to be adversely affected by designation. It is the old-timers who are almost universally in favor of the regulations, because there had always been these kinds of design constraints in Sunnyside Gardens. What we are afraid of is the newcomers who have an attitude of owning alone as if I've bought this house, I can do whatever I want to it because I've paid all this money for it.
And I have to jump in again for time. Susan, last word.
I just
what
like
happens
to,
next and where can they
what
get
happens
more information?
Next is that I think it's very important that people become informed about the hearing that's going to occur.
Does it have a date?
No date set up yet. And again, I just would like to say that the majority, as far as I can see, of old-timers in the neighborhood, and remember, I'm doing an interview study where I'm interviewing old-timers as well as newcomers. There is not consensus in this neighborhood for Landmarks to be the body to oversee the regulation of the neighborhood. It's a minority who's for it.
We have to leave it there and unresolved. Jeffrey Kressler.
No, it's not unresolved. Brian, it's going to be a landmark.
John Jay College, Jeffrey Kressler. Hunter College, Susan Micklejohn, both residents of Sunnyside Gardens, Queens. Thank you both
very much.
Thank you so
much, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.